Welcome. This is Dr. Susan Call with Temple of Health Radio Show, and today I'm pleased to have with me Matt Ascener, who is the author of the book, The Way Home, Making Heaven on Earth. Mattis went through a series of spiritual awakenings to come to his true purpose, which was to help explain things to people who might not see through the illusion quite so easily, and to help them understand our relationship to Mother Earth. Welcome, Mattis. Thanks for joining us today.
Well, thanks for having me on as a guest, Susan. I appreciate it.
Well, you've had an interesting journey yourself. Would you like to tell our listeners a little bit about how you came to be on the path you're currently on?
Yeah. I used to work on Wall Street. I was a global money manager for about 15 years, and then in the mid-90s, life changes began to happening. And in 1997, my wife and I of 10 years separated, went our different ways, and I left Wall Street and felt a calling. And then in 1999, I felt that, you know, God asked me to be his or her servant. And so I accepted, and that began my path. And really, it was not only a spiritual awakening, it was just a learning awakening as well. And I ended up coming back home to where I grew up in Syracuse in 2000, in the home, small home that I grew up, gave up my lavish Wall Street lifestyle, and began doing a variety of things, from social activism to praying. And then in 2002, I was asked to people to pray around Onondaga Lake. And that began my genesis with Mother Earth, which culminated in Mother Earth prayers, a listing of sacred sites, and things like that. And when I talk about my book, Making Heaven on Earth, in 1999, you know, when I accepted that call in February of 99, you know, God said to me, well, you're going to help me make heaven on earth. And I said, what the heck is heaven on earth? And, you know, that also became, that's the title of the book. I try to explain that, you know, we have to get back to our roots and, you know, begin the path back to the Creator.
I have studied similar, some of the same material that you studied to understand how consciousness is kind of layered. And I think it's a very important concept to understand that we are not individual beings that can do what we want within the greater consciousness without having it turn around and affect us. And many of the great mystery schools have looked at how things are structured, and I think it's a little bit important to understand how things are actually structured in order to understand why your book is so important.
Yes, well, thank you. I mean, I think that, you know, and I don't talk about it, you know, I've learned a lot since I've written the book, but I mean, I didn't talk about it in these specifics, but I think that just to look at the earth to understand that there is a hierarchy, there's the physical plane, mm-hmm. there's the energy plane, there's the mental plane, and then there's basically we can call the collective plane. And my book really deals with the collective plane. And just as we talk about mind over body, which basically means our mind influences our body, you know, that really means that higher planes rule over lower planes. And the collective plane is the plane above the mental plane. So that rules over us. And a lot of people are, you know, talk about that, as you said, mystery schools. Even today, you know, David Brooks' recent book, The Social Animal, is a lot about how our collective consciousness affects us, you know, Jungian art types, things like that. Mm-hmm. It has a powerful influence. We think that, you know, we're rational beings. We really aren't. We're caught up by this collective consciousness that influences in so many different ways, and that collective consciousness is made up of a lot of different things, from what Jung would call archetypes to, you know, what I guess Rupert Sheldrake would call morphic resonance or group mm-hmm. behavior or of our species behavior, as well as others have called, you know, pendulums or smaller cohorts or groups that we belong to. Every association that we're involved with has an influence on our consciousness. And we need to be aware of the people. You know, they say your friends influence you when you were growing up. Mm-hmm. It certainly is the truth. The people around you will affect your consciousness in so many different ways.
And that's what I really liked about the first part of your book, was when you explained how the law of attraction is just not, you know, in the physical plane. It's actually all the way up. So that if you have violent or hateful thoughts, that will align to you things that are violent and hateful in ways that you may not even understand. You know, like somebody having an argument with their wife on the highway may run into you, you know. It's like,
yeah, that's right. That's a great example. And yeah, you don't understand it, yeah.
And you wouldn't understand it. You know, many religions have talked about the illusionary nature of the physical world. And I think that Edgar Cayce may have said it best when he said that nothing in the physical plane is a cause. There's no causal things in the physical plane. Causal things always occur at higher planes. And one of my teachers once said it was like she's within she's within she's. And that's a good way to put it, because when you die, you drop your physical sheath, but for a while at least, your astral sheath is still intact, and that's why people can communicate with people who are recently deceased. And then there's a mental sheath above that, and then, as you say, a higher causal sheath above that. And I guess if you really, you know, we really need to start having people understand this relationship so that they know, the example you gave in your book, if they constantly play violent video games and watch violent movies and surround themselves in violence, then that the higher things, will, the law of attraction will occur in the mental realm, which is then cascades down into the physical realm.
Yeah, no, there's no doubt about that. Yeah, the choices of what we think and do is has profound influence upon us. And I think that what I'm coming to understand more and more is that even when people talk about, you know, the brain and the activity, the brain is really just a reflection of where our intention is and
right.
where our consciousness is. You know, who's the guy, Neuberger, that did all this stuff about the brain and meditation and stuff? You know, what we do and think influences. So they talk about changing our DNA. It's our mind, our body to a certain degree. I mean, you're a doctor, so I don't want to get on your turf. Is in essence just a processing machine of our intention and a reflection mm-hmm. of our individual as well as our collective consciousness.
And what I think is so important for individuals to understand about spiritual practices like meditation is that when you actually engage in these practices on a regular basis, you get downloaded with all of this energy. And you also get downloaded with thoughts and with specific instructions sometimes, like I'm sure you did when you were guided toward writing this book. But the energy that you get downloaded with is just, I mean, it's just an amazing example of what you write of in your book, which is that we are, you know, we're interconnected, because when you feel this energy flow into you, you realize that individually and as a planet, we are tapped into something with a crapload of energy, you know, just a huge amount of energy.
Yeah, no, it's energy as well as consciousness. I call
right.
it cosmic, you know, and you mentioned, you know, consciousness, and I think, let me just say two things. First off, we are beings of consciousness. If you're on mm-hmm. the spiritual path, that's what all the great teachers say to us, as you know, mentioned in the beginning. So you have to understand that. In the material world, the world of science says it's energy. Unfortunately, as I talk about, we don't have a term, as you're trying to describe energy, consciousness. We're not used to thinking along those terms. But effectively, we are beings of energy, consciousness. And second of all, the idea is that we are what we absorb. I'm working on my next book, and what I talk about in this book is how I mentioned that you mentioned the attraction. When we meditate, we open up this spigot that elevates our consciousness. That we, you know, when you begin to meditate, you close out the world around you.
Mm-hmm.
Your physical body gets very still. Your breathing goes. All of these are a fact that your consciousness is beginning to raise. And when it rises, you're getting fed this sort of what I call cosmic prana, this essence that comes into you that elevates your consciousness, raises, you know, helps with the evolution of your soul. And it's very important because, again, getting back to the people that you hang out, the groups that you associate with, you know, you're drinking that same nectar, and you're kind of like rubbing off on them. You know, it's kind of like we're all in this together, and the groups that you're associated with, you know, they're influencing what is coming into you, what you're absorbing, and it affects your consciousness.
Yeah, I've actually, ever since I moved to Atlanta, or shortly thereafter, I've been involved in meditation groups, usually on a weekly basis. And I attribute my spiritual growth to meditating with a group. You can meditate by yourself, and I do frequently, but it's really group work that is so helpful in speeding up things.
Amen.
You know, you're just, and you know, group prayer includes what goes on in churches as well. I mean, it's not just, it's any group that meets with the intent of contacting a power outside of themselves for guidance and energy or consciousness or whatever you want to call it, but with the intent of, you know, of worshiping, that's how the Christian term would be, or just simply bathing in the energy, which is what we do. I mean, we bathe in this really, really high energy, and then thoughts come to us, and the thoughts are very, very helpful and also very protective. In the group I was in, which contains a lot of medical people, we ask if we should get the vaccine against the bird flu because the bird flu is so deadly. And the answer is not necessarily, because some of that vaccine has the bird flu in it. And then 2 weeks later, it was revealed that some of the vaccine did have the bird flu in it. So,
wow.
You know, I mean, that's pretty protective. You know, like, nope, don't think so.
Yeah, no, I mean, I think you open up yourself, your blockages, and you definitely get enlightened. I mean, that's the insights, the enlightenment. Absolutely. Good for you.
And I think people need to really read your book in terms of understanding the plane. You did a really great job of explaining the different planes and the different laws and how they affect the different planes. And then some very practical advice on what you can do, you know, just in general to protect yourself as well as take advantage of these principles. Because some of the warnings you give in your book are very good, you know, that there are energy forms on other planes that are attracted in certain circumstances. I don't think the majority of people know that. I really don't think they do.
Well, the Bible talks about demons, and there certainly are demons. I mean, I hate to say it. There's thought forms. There's a lot of different things.
Yeah, demons are thought forms. And
well, no, I think they're actually real beings. I mean, I think there's thought forms, but I also think there's really entities. I mean, there's what they call a tulpa. I mean, people can create an entity of sort that becomes, that has a life of its own, that can, you know, but basically they're all energy feeders of some sort. I mean, that's
I like
just
the term energy feeder. That's
they're all energy feeders. I mean, the question is, Sri Aurobindo, the great sage, talked about it. And they, if you've ever seen, I mean, they kind of look like, they look like stick people. They look like Gumby without a neck, 6 to 8 feet tall. They're shadow types of things. And, you know, they're basically energy feeders. They live at that plane above where they feed on energy, and they're really cruel, sadistic, and do horrible things. And that is a reality. I mean, they are out there. It, you know, people always say, you know, demons are they're going to attach you, get attachments, and the Bible, Jesus, exercise you. Well, that's certainly out there. But the greater damage that they do is they play with you and they feed off you and then ultimately come to harvest you. I mean, it's just it's a horrible thing, you know. And then there's also thought forms, you know, collective thought forms and the things that we talk about, archetypes. Each thought looks to, you know, attract other things and to multiply. I call it like seed thoughts or thought seeds, and they're like weeds, and they get more and more powerful. It's Hindus call the term samskara. Each thought that we have creates an impression in our mind, and like the groove of a record, it gets deeper and deeper the more you think about it or practice it. It's kind of like you can't get a thought out of your mind. You get addictive behavior. And then these also begin to operate, and I can't tell you when, I don't know when, but when does that become a collective thought form that has a life of its own that begins to exist, and then you know, then it becomes a sort of thing out there in this world, and, you know, becomes an archetype. It also becomes what we call a corporation, an entity, and that looks to have you worship it, to have you think about it, to apply thought to whatever its purpose is, and say, think about me, do this. You know, wear this corporate logo, or you know, buy my goods, or tell others about my goods, or act in this sort of way. I mean, and that's just the way the world operates.
And that tells you how damaging false accusation is. If you think, for example, about Michael Jackson, the false accusations that he had, nobody can think about Michael Jackson now without you know, without thinking about those accusations, even though in fact there may have been like no truth whatsoever to them. So that's, you know, that shows you how powerful thought forms are in society.
Yeah, no, amen. All it is, the reality around us is thought forms that, you know, have materialized into physical objects or thought forms that are looking to manifest and influence our behavior at a certain level.
And I liked what you said in your book about karma, because that's my understanding of karma too. I studied a lot of the Alice Bailey materials. In fact, I actually was guided to buy 7 of the books, which I didn't read for 7 years, which was interesting. I put them away for 7 years, but until I was ready. But let's talk a little bit about karma, because I think it's important for people to understand that karma is a law and is not just an idea, but tell about what you've said in the book about karma, because I think it's interesting.
Well, I said karma, and to get back to the thought forms, karma becomes the root of our karma is our thoughts.
Right.
And again, we create what is called samskaras. These are thought forms. And these thought forms then begin to, they attach to us. And they bring in certain things into our life that are similar, and they try to act out patterns. And if we do something bad, it attaches to us and it stays there. And at some point, we have to, you know, get rid of it or face it at some point. And that usually is in the next life. But what ends up happening is when we die, all of these samskaras attach to us, and we carry them forward into our future life as karma. That's how we come out this disposition. Why are we here? Why does this happen to us? These are actions and patterns that we've created over many, you know, the previous lifetime or many lifetimes, and they determine who we're going to, how we're going to, the type of person we're going to be, the experiences that we have. And in the book, I mean, I really believe in this, and I talk about this, that I believe like Tibetan Buddhists have this sort of bardos where they pray for you at your death, that thought form and that meditation and focus on you can create sort of a vessel, a protective vessel that'll channel you across to your next life. I believe that same concept, and that's the conclusion of my book, really, is that we have certain things if we focus on, I say, love, God, you know, work with Mother Earth and the vision of heaven on earth, that those vessels can rescue us. If we just give life and nurture those vessels collectively rather than individually, and right now, unfortunately, individually, we are focusing on the wrong things. You know, corporate entities, violent activities, selfish capitalism. And, you know, as a consequence, we're suffering. We've created this dystopia. Did I tell what you wanted? Did you have another thing you wanted me to talk about when you said karma?
No, that was it. I wanted exactly what you said about it, because I think people think that they can run from their karma, that they can, that somehow they can outsmart it, but the only way to get around it, like you say, is by developing your grace bank account with things like concentration on love, on helping others, on helping the planet. You can balance your karma that way, but you can't balance your karma by somehow tricking it or running away from it.
No, you can't. And you know, the other thing to think about is we also have a group karma.
Right.
And that's where kind of I might be at odds with certain sorts of more individualistic religions. I think that we are in this collectively.
Mm-hmm.
And as we talked about, our collective thoughts, both as who we are as individuals, you know, in the groups we are, in our family, our friends, where we work, our community, mm-hmm. and even the larger humankind, and then just this whole planet, are all in this together. And it, I think it's just very difficult to break through individually. We have to work this out together. And I think, you know, we have fragmented down from our collective self. I mean, that's a term everybody talks about, fragmentation, individuality, ego, et cetera, et cetera. I just think it's just incredibly difficult for us to, you know, reach enlightenment by ourselves.
Yeah, I agree. And speaking of national karma, it's probably occurred to you, as it's occurred to many of us, that we really haven't had the karmic backlash that we would have expected from the dropping of the 2 nuclear weapons in Japan. And, you know, there's always a question, did the Marshall Plan help with mitigating that karma? So maybe something like Three Mile Island was the karma, or is there more to come? This is an interesting question.
I don't have any idea. I mean, I really I don't know. I mean, if you currently the bomb was bad, I think when you look at the United States, I think it offers great hope.
Mm-hmm.
And it what it is, I think, is why it's a couple of reasons why it has become where it is that I think it's a coming together of states, of a collective consciousness, which is that coming together. I also think that a lot of native cultures here before, while they did have their problems, were actually pretty good cultures. You know what I'm saying? Loving, mm-hmm. lived in harmony with mother. I mean, you know, the desecration that we've seen in other parts of the world, you know, whether it, you know, be, God, I was just reading Chris Hedges' article on, you know, whether it be Easter Island or even the Mayan culture or things. I don't think that went on so much in the United, the 48 states, per se. And, you know, I live in the land where the peacemaker came, the Haudenosaunee, the Iroquois. And I just think, you know, they had certainly had their violence, they had some problems, but they did come together. They empowered women.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I'm saying? I mean, a lot of, the women's movement was born, you know, a stone's throw from where I live, you know. So, I mean, there were things like that in this country that I think was, you know, there's a Sikh phrase that I can't think of right now. They've eaten all the good karma. And I think what you're saying is maybe we have eaten all the good karma, and there will be a certain price to pay for what we have. But I think that when we came here, there was a lot of good things happening, and I think, unfortunately, certain groups and people have exploited those.
Yeah. Now, the other thing that I thought was so interesting, that is so appropriate to talk about today because of the earthquake in Japan yesterday, is that when things get really, really out of balance, the earth as an entity, and I think we need to talk a little bit about the earth as an entity, but that the earth as an entity goes through certain blockages and problems in the energy flow, and these can result in natural disasters, and then how mankind influences this process.
Oh, no, that's a key important. The thing I'll just say, you have to be careful, because a lot of people get upset when they say, you know, that's very blasphemous, Old Testament, you know, point the finger, you know, and saying, you know, you're saying those people deserved it. I don't necessarily think those people deserved it, but, you know, whatever happens, that's the wrong thing to say. You know, we should pray for them and feel bad for them. But I clearly believe, and I know this to be true, that we have this dynamic relationship with Mother Earth. Either we co-create with her, raise our consciousness. Again, remember, as we talked in the beginning, you know, these sorts of energies and consciousness, she's the one that feeds us. And we can create a bigger and bigger conduit or vessel for that. At the same time, if we damage her, we break up her, you know, her flow of prana. You know, when they talk about the individual body and how disease comes about, they're basically saying, you know, acupuncture and things like that. Focus on trying to clean up, you know, that blockages create disease. That, in other words, there's a lack of flow of energy within our body. Well, Mother Earth is just like us.
Right.
So when we create blockages, and you can see it all the time in certain places. I'll be honest with you. I meditate outdoors and now have been doing it actively for, God, 7 or 8 years. I spend at least one day outdoors all day meditating, and I've become very sensitive. I can't go certain places. I get immediately headaches, sick, mm-hmm. not feeling good. And, you know, that's because we've destroyed, or, you know, we put bad thoughts. There's two things. Either A, we put out, you know, negative thoughts in those areas, and the thoughts linger in a place, or B, you know, those thoughts begin to break up Mother Earth's field. We've also, you know, technology is now starting to break up her fields. For example, you know, I believe windmills are damaging to Mother Earth. Telephones.
Harp.
Pardon?
Harp.
What's harp?
Harp, look it up. Harp is a defense thing.
Oh, yeah, yeah,
harp.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah. I'll look.
Angels don't play this harp.
Yeah, but I mean
that article.
Yeah, I got to look that up because no, I'm interested. I saw that in 60 Minutes with the. Is that what you're talking about? That machine that they have?
Yeah, Jesse Ventura did a thing. Well, it's not just the U.S. Actually, I think they have one in Norway, and I think Russia has one. There are multiple harps, but essentially, it's very strong electromagnetic things that are pointed either into the ground or up into the air.
Oh, wow.
Cause extreme changes in this energy flow that we were
about. And that leads to problems down the road. And that and
it
that's
can also
the,
cause earthquakes, period.
Yeah, no, it can, and it might be causing the earthquakes. I mean, that's a, you know, and unfortunately, people are suffering because of those sorts of behaviors. And the Bible really, you know, I mean, I talk about in the book, and I can't quote the exact quotations, but basically they say, you know, if you do this, if you defile the land, if you kill, there will be repercussions. And basically then this is what you see, the repercussions that come.
Yeah, I've studied Revelations, and I've come to the conclusion that the plagues are all man-made. You know, these weaponized biological agents that we've weaponized. I was in the military. I know a great deal about them. And the things like with HAARP and with, I mean, I think that mankind actually is inventing and using the things that are bringing these about. And so it may not be so much that God is wrathful as that we are stupid. You know?
No. I mean, I agree. God is just telling you. Look, you know, if you swim, you know, when it's 10 degrees below zero, you're going to die. You know, it's just basically. But people get, you know, upset with that because they think it's judgmental. Now, conversely, as I mentioned, something really, really beautiful happens when we learn how to co-create with Mother Earth. And I think that's this sort of coming together with her. And I talk about energy vortices in the book. And if you go, I've got articles also on Wisdom Magazine. If you go on there, a lot of articles I've written. They're my webpage, MotherEarthPrayers.org. And each of our thoughts, Hindus call avritti, V-R-I-T-T-I, and basically that is literally translated as whirlpool. And our thoughts stay in a place, and they act like a whirlpool, pulling you in. And if we keep thinking and doing the same thing over and over again, and we keep loving positive things, this whirlpool begins to form what some people call a vortex. Mm-hmm. And that vortex then begins to pull in more and more. So in other words, let's say if you're meditating and you're bringing in this consciousness from an area of 3 feet around you, if you meditate in a vortex, that expands to 5 or 6 or 7 or 8 feet. So you're bringing in more of this nourishment that's going to elevate your consciousness. And that's one of the key things. And then other things begin to happen also. The plane to higher, you know, the veil begins to thin, I think, as they would say. The ability to go and connect in higher planes of existence opens up as the veil there to that other realm begins to be, you know, thin and thin and thin. And I think that's the thing to understand, is that there's a powerful positive thing that can happen to us if we learn how to co-create with Mother Earth. And that's what I spend one of my longest chapters is they're just trying to explain how to work with things like ley lines, how to clean up space. And, you know, if we can learn that, just some dedicated people that are very passionate about healing the world and healing each other, you can have a profound influence. Because if you, let's say, go meditate on what Dowsers would call a ley line, a line of consciousness, you know, that is going to carry your intentions that much farther. You know, you can really then begin to influence the world and shape, you know, behavior in a positive way.
One of my earlier spiritual students was a Marine fighter pilot who later became an airline pilot.
Uh-huh.
And he developed spiritual sight and hearing through working with the group that I was with. And later on was guided, because he flew all over the world with TWA and then Delta, he was guided say to go to a certain place in Europe and meditate at a certain place.
Wow.
And later he'd find out that the peace talks were a couple of blocks away from where he was meditating.
Wow.
Something like that. So there are a great deal of people who are spiritually connected right now who are guided to these points, and they're just simply asked to meditate at a certain location. And so I think that, that Spirit has been trying to free up these blockages, as you would say, by sending many of us who have spiritual hearing out and asking us to sit at a certain point, and either as a group or individually, and free up the problems at that point, not in the physical realm so much, but maybe in the higher realm.
No. I mean, I mean, absolutely. I mean, that's why, you know, we can individually prayer. And if we go to certain places, strategic places, if we know those, people call them acupuncture points, but I think it's dealing with consciousness, not so much energy, we can have a profound influence. And
yeah. You know,
that's what I hope my book does, and the other things I talk about is teach people how to become earth healers or earth keepers,
right,
or understanding that they can work with that. It's also really important that you turn your house into a sanctuary, and that's one of the other things I talk in there. And that's something that I have, you know, I do a lot of social activism, and I'm getting this argument with people, oh, you know, Jesus was with the poor, Jesus did this, and, you know, but at the end of the day, that was Jesus, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, we have to come home, we need to heal, we need to rest, we need to replenish ourselves. So having a home that is a sanctuary is vital for your spiritual development as well as your, you know, your well-being, because you need to come home and feel rested, not to be bothered, because, as again, we're getting into it, you know, your environment is going to shape you. If you're in a bad environment, you might not be getting the energy or consciousness, plus also the thought forms that linger there are going to be coming on to you.
Right.
You know, whenever I go out into a bad place, I always come home, I've got a smudge area where I smudge myself.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, doing those things. Then I clean the ley lines. All of those things, you know, are very important to turning your home into some place that is a safe harbor for you, where you can recharge your batteries. You know, like, it's just like sleep. Just think about it as sleep. You're just sleeping at home. You know, dowsers talk about cancer houses.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, the Germans, I guess, did a lot of work on this in particular. And there are certain places, you know, people get cancer, and it's because they're in a bad space, a space that maybe has some sort of problems with Mother Earth, but also could just be a bad space where bad things have happened before.
Right.
And that is just going to lead to cancer.
Yeah.
You know, or something, other disease to you. And it's something as simple as moving your bed could alleviate your cancer, possibly. You know, you can't say that for everything, but there is a possibility.
Oh, there's no doubt that cancer is heavily influenced by energy and electromagnetics and even interdimensional considerations. I've seen cancer the size of a grapefruit disappear within 2 weeks just because of shamanic intervention. It's just, you know, like, it just happens, and it's documentable. You know, it's, this particular case was documented with, you know, MRIs and CAT scans. Where did it go? You know?
Yeah. Well, you know,
disappeared.
You know, Richard Gerber, in his book Vibrational Medicine, talked about cancer, and he said that what they found on some, it was just like a comment. It wasn't any detail. But he said basically that the cancer cells showed the pattern of a negative vortex. And what a negative vortex is a place that's very debilitating. In other words, we talked about what happens when you do bad things over in a period of in a place. Mm-hmm. What ends up, the field initially begins to break down. In other words, there's not, it's just like your cell phone. It's a dead spot. And over a period of time, if it gets worse and worse, it begins to form a negative vortex. And what that means, instead of a, you know, that you begin to get drained when you go there. You walk into there, and it's like a hurricane that is sucking the life out of you.
Right.
And, you know, it may well be, as you said, that could be the link that we're looking at.
Well, the cancer, that, from what I understand, is that it's the organ, and even if the organ's a bone marrow, like in the case of leukemia, but it's an organ-based energy drop. So if you have a severe biological conflict, Dr. Hammer described this, you develop a lesion in the brain that can be actually seen on CAT scan that corresponds to the organ that dropped the energy precipitously, and that as long as that Hammer lesion is there, the cancer is in the ham religion disappears, and he's shown that in 35,000 cases. And he had like a 95% cure rate in cancer. Of course, they put him in jail in Austria because, you know, you can't have that. You can't have people going around curing cancers, you know. So I studied very carefully Hammer's work and related people that understood it was a spiritually based illness and an organ-based illness. And that is really true. So the best thing you can do to help avoid cancer, other than avoid carcinogens, of course, and avoid negative energy places like you're talking of, is to meditate in a group, to pray, to raise your overall energy. And so that, you know, if you're vibrating at a high enough rate, even if you get hit with something like a biological conflict, we're talking about a spouse cheating on you, a child almost dying, you know, any of the things that make you go into shock. And you know, the studies of people who've gotten cancer often show that within 6 months or a year, they've had some sort of biological conflict problem. So it's common. It's very common.
Well, you know, the thing is I don't, you know, I haven't had a cold or anything serious for, like, God, about 8 or 10 years. I can't remember the last time I had a cold, a flu, or anything. And I think, you know, that just comes from tapping into Mother Earth.
It does, yeah.
And you can really teach yourself, and that's another thing that I talk about in the book, is how to gain sentience. If mm-hmm. you can develop that ability with, you know, Mother Earth, she begins to nurture you with all the vitamins, and, mm-hmm. and it just can become incredibly powerful to you. You know, I'm tempted to, you know, walk into a medical center and say, give me some of that really, is it MRSA, I guess, that really contagious virus?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Is, you know, just start licking some of it and go, see, it doesn't affect me. Let me tell you why.
Yeah.
You know, I think I'm a little bit ahead of the curve, but I do think that if people really, as you said, meditate, you raise your consciousness and you attract them, it's just so many different positive things flow from that.
And so many of the more spiritually based doctors have shown that now, that programs where people, you know, change their diet, change their spiritual habits, can overcome heart disease, can overcome cancer, can overcome a wide variety of things. And it's, the mechanism is just what you said. It's raising your vibrational rate enough so that even if you get hit with something like the bacteria or the
oh, yeah.
virus or the accident, you're strong enough to withstand it because your bone doesn't break because you've had enough vitamin D in your system. And it, not that everybody needs to take vitamin D either. There are breatharians out there that don't eat or drink, literally don't eat or drink, and take all of their energy in through prana just from tapping into what you speak about in your book. So if people can live just on the energy, we need to look at that a little bit more, especially because our society is not real healthy right now.
Amen. Yeah, no.
I'm preparing a talk to give at Emory. There's a global health and humanitarian summit there the first, second, and third of April. Basically, I was writing it this week, and it's on the cost benefits of spiritual, holistic, and integrative medicine. And I mean, we currently spend 17.3% of our gross domestic product on healthcare, and we are, according to a 2000 report out of 191 countries polled, we're number one in healthcare expenditures, but number 73 in overall results. What do you think? Huh?
Yeah, no,
we're not getting much for our money, are we?
Yeah, well, you know, that gets into the, I mean, that gets to the whole argument is that, you know, yeah, we're not getting our money's worth and a lot of different things. Yeah, it's
Well, but what you talk about in your book and what I'm going to be talking about at the conference is accepting responsibility for, you know, your health, for mother's health, for, you know, your neighbor's health, you know, understanding that we are all connected And so that we have to change the behaviors that are leading to the disruption in the energy fields or the consciousness fields, if you want to call them that. But when things start to break down, it's going to be expensive. I mean, that's basically, you know.
Yeah, and it is breaking down, yeah. I mean, it's just, yeah. It's unfortunately a lot of people are going to get sick and suffer because of it.
Well, let's talk a little bit about, which you didn't cover a lot in your book, maybe this is what you're writing on now. Let's talk a little bit about how the energy, how it's different now than it was, say, 40 years ago, and the opportunities we have in the next few years to really make a significant shift in our collective consciousness.
Well, I'm not talking about so much about that, but I do think that there's a great opportunity to, you know, make a positive world. Now, what has happened with the world, I mean, I guess I did talk about it a little bit, I mean, in a different mm-hmm. fashion. I talked about the global monkey brain.
Right.
And what I talk about there is that, you know, I was going to write some things, I just didn't. I think there's been several assaults on Mother Earth, and the first one is just this whole idea that we can control Mother Earth, that, you know, the idea is a seed thought that we planted a long, long time ago when we first entered the physical plane, that, you know, we can, you know, control this, we can do things, and that's morphed. And then I think that, you know, civilization coming together, we put more and more pressure through our actions, these biblical things, we've talked about them. But then the next kind of big stage was the Industrial Revolution,
mm-hmm.
that really, this technology advance allowed us to really begin, you know, as I say, raping and pillaging Mother Earth to a greater degree. And I think that that is, you know, that marked a significant turning point, you know, the pollution, the industrial pollution, things that we see like that, global warming. And then I say there was a next stage that, I would call is this most recent digital communications and, you know, maybe even earlier with radio waves and all those things and electronics. We've now accelerated our assault on Mother Earth, and we've gone from polluting her now with these micro to microwaving her. Basically, we're de facto microwaving Mother Earth right now. So we're, you know, earlier, let's say we were putting stress on her organs with pollution. Now we're looking to kill her organs. You know, the harp thing that you talk about, all these things, the windmills, all of these things break up her flow, her processes. You know, that, you know, her chakras or things like that. She can't function. Her organs, her invisible organs, her organs in higher planes, we're now beginning to break those up in a great degree. And I think that's the big danger that we're now, you know, there's an article. Are you familiar with Chris Hedges?
No, I'm not.
He wrote something on Truth Dig, and he says, I was just reading it. It says that this time we're taking the whole planet with us. And the publication is called Truth Dig. It's just an online publication. And Chris was, you know, a writer for the New York Times, and he's a big activist and stuff like that. But that's what's going on now, is that, you know, our assault has accelerated to such a great degree that we're now just destroying all of Earth, you know, just destroying Mother Earth on a level that we've never seen before. He doesn't go into the stuff that I talk about, but that's what's going on. So, I mean, I think that's one thing, that how the Earth has shifted now. I mean, and it's becoming, there's other people that have talked, and I guess I'm going to be kind of on an area that I don't have the research for, just this whole fact of how the geomagnetic field has weakened as well.
Mm-hmm.
And that's why people believe that, pardon?
It is. There's very interesting things that are going to happen, like your GPS may not work in the near future.
Yeah, your GPS might not work. The
multiple
pole shift.
Magnetic poles.
Both could shift. All sorts of things can happen.
Yeah.
And so the best remedy for you right now, I tell your readers, is start connecting with Mother Earth. You know, that's the best thing you can do, because if you connect with her, you can develop your immunity, if I can say that word.
Right.
Yeah, and I talk about this global monkey brain in the book, and really what it is now we've also, now we've technology ravaged Mother Earth, but we've created this consciousness, you know, that, you know, where, you know, a monkey, when you begin to meditate, they describe it as a monkey's brain, that your thoughts jump from thought to thought, and you really can't think straight, you know. Well, we've now created this global monkey brain where everybody is you know, can't function. They've got a, you know, a cell phone.
Everybody has ADD.
Right. Everybody has ADD.
To the extreme.
To the extreme. And that's what's happened is we become so short-term. We're barraged with information.
Right.
We're barraged with images. You know, and that's, I guess that quote, I can't remember the name of the professor now, the guy, the meditation guy out of Boston, John Kabat-Zinn. Is that his name, right?
Yeah, I met him. I actually met him. I'll tell you that story in a minute, but go ahead and finish your story.
Yeah, and he basically says that we've created a world now where ADD becomes the natural function of kids. Kids are acting whether they you know are acting in response. You know, this whole behavior, even possibly with autism, all these things. Kids are responding to the stimulus that we've created, this global monkey brain. And also global monkey brain, as I talk to me in my book, means that when we can't concentrate, we're not tapped into Mother Earth. We're not tapped into higher consciousness. Our consciousness is not being fed. So it has lots and lots of repercussions. You know, when you talked about bird flu earlier in this, you know, this bad swine flu that happened a few years ago, and they were saying all these young people were vulnerable. You know, my take on that was these kids were so vulnerable because they are not connected with Mother Earth. I mean, you know, there's this, I can't think of his name either, another guy out of the New York Times. He's, you know, the kids just don't play outdoors anymore.
Right.
And because of that, again, they're not connected. They're not getting their nutrients.
They're in front of their computers.
Yeah, right. And so when something hits, they're not prepared for it.
Well, that's totally true. Their immune systems aren't out healthy. Vitamin D, which is sunlight, is linked to your immunity. To a great degree, and we have a national deficiency of vitamin D. Although I think it's more than just not being out in the sun, because I know people out in the sun who still have very low vitamin D. So I think I still think it's something like the plastic exposure, some other maybe electromagnetic exposure.
Well, the electromagnet destroys you, but it's also, I think, also the connection with Mother Earth. I mean, I think that we need to connect with her. There was a study. God, I can't, you know, I couldn't find it. I remember I was trying to look at it. But I heard on the radio one day, it said the people that are in their 70s are healthier than people in their 60s, are healthier than people in their 50s. And basically saying if you break your bone or do something, little things, your chance of recuperating are better. And I think that comes down to your connection to Mother Earth. The other, we're talking about this brain thing, is this the guy that wrote The Cosmic Egg, what was his name, John Chilton Peirce or something.
He has another
transcending.
I've interviewed him.
Pardon?
I've interviewed him.
Yeah, and he talked about this sort of brain act that you know, he studies kids now, and he was talking that people born before 1969 have a certain way of looking at things. Kids afterwards are just totally different.
Right. That's true. Well, let me tell you the story about John Kabat-Zinn. It was kind of interesting. I was in a bookstore, and I saw, you know, how they have the displays. There was one with his books on it because he had a bestseller then. And I pick it up and I look at it, the book, and I go to say to myself, gee, I'd like to meet him. And I've been doing this radio show for, you know, 17 years, so I've met the majority of spiritual and holistic and consciousness researchers through the radio show. But so I thought maybe I'd do that. But turned out I was guided at one of the hostels I was at to go to the lecture hall, not knowing why, but he happened to be speaking there. And so I was, like, kind of surprised that he was speaking because I didn't know. And I listened to his talk, and then afterward I went down and talked to him for a few minutes about some of the stuff that, you know, our meditation group was doing because, you know, he was talking about the group meditations and everything. And the vice president of the hostel was there, and he looked at the vice president and said, he said, why did you pay me to come speak? You just should have had her speak. But wasn't that interesting that I looked at his book, the picture on the back of his book, and said, I'd like to meet him, and then consciousness arranged that meeting.
Well, good for you.
That was just really wild. So it was fun. Yeah.
Well, excellent.
So.
Well, excellent.
Well, you say you're working on your new book. What is your new book on?
Well, you know, that's, you know, part of it is trying to get people to, you know, accept and believe what I'm saying. And I started several times, and I've got another project that I'd like to talk about. But basically what it is that it's about our relationship with to Mother Earth. And look, it's a book about the subtle body and Mother Earth put together. And I think that there's a lot of misnomers. People that talk about the subtle body are always saying, well, it's energy. It's energy. No, there's like, energy is like saying, you know, vodka and water are the same thing. They're not. Mm-hmm. They're clear, they're liquid, but they're clearly different. And in between there, there's a whole coterie of things as well. And I think that's probably what I'm trying to teach people and show how the things that we've talked about in more detail, how this consciousness, we basically have a soul. You know, Sri Aurobindo called it a psychic being also around us that we're developing here. Mm-hmm. And that's fed by our actions and our thoughts. And go into more detail about how these specific parts of our body work in relationship to Mother Earth and how we can develop our sentience of Mother Earth. And, you know, that's it, the function of the subtle body in Mother Earth, and then begin to talk about the aspects of Mother Earth. You know, talk about her chakras, her plane. And it can really be the lower planes. I mean, once you get into, you know, it's very difficult to try to, as you, even I douse, I'm pretty gifted, and I spend a lot of time just understanding all these different things, but at least begin people to understand what energy lines are, the different types of prana, et cetera, and then give a cosmology of Mother Earth and then show how it relates to the subtle body and try to get people thinking along those lines. Because if you begin to think about along those lines, you give strength to that reality. Do you follow what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Whatever we think about, we give life to. So if we begin thinking there, as we've been talking about, this other reality, and the more that you can get people to think about it, the stronger that other reality begins to be.
Right. Energy follows thought.
Yeah. And just two couple of quick things. First off,
mm-hmm.
if people want to develop their sentience, which is their feeling of Mother Earth, the best way to do this, and I teach this all the time, you can just begin to just try to appreciate and thank Mother Earth. Just take that first step of saying, thank you, Mother, giving her Native American, say thank you, begin to appreciate her in little ways, think about her. And I always say, you know, the example I use in the book is that, you know, if you're driving down the road and you see a billboard, and there's this, like, tree in front of it, don't see the billboard, see the tree. Begin
right.
the process that way. And over time, and then go start meditating, try to feel her. If you do energy work, you probably already can feel her. Mm-hmm. Then begin to go from there and feel her. And I think that that's just the best thing that you can do. I mean, just as if, and that's what I want to go in more detail. I talk about it a little bit in my book. There's another one guy called... Cohen is his last name. He's a professor now out of, he's got a whole detailed book. And, you know, there's another path for you. Or, and read books like by Thomas Berry or people like that, that were, you know, who is a black elk or, you know, Native Americans. Just, you know, mm-hmm. change your focus and wonderful things will start happening.
Yeah, I think it's very important to have gratitude. In fact, I'm going to be interviewing a couple of people are just on the concept of gratitude. It's a very, very powerful spiritual practice, and who better to be grateful to than Mother Earth?
Amen.
You know, like that's
yeah.
is probably
yeah.
something that we should all do.
The other thing I say to you is my people should go to my website, MotherEarthPrayers.org. I got lots of stuff on Mother Earth. My
mm-hmm.
book is The Way Home, Making Heaven on Earth. And if you go to my website, there's another a project that I'm working on right now, and it's a place called Spirit House. It was an old spiritualist mecca in upstate New York, Georgetown, New York, where I'm at, and I'm trying to resuscitate that right now. The house is in decay and turning into a spiritual healing and retreat center. And this is one of the top listings of my sacred sites, and when I talk about my transformation, I believe Mother Earth has a soul. And I believe that that soul is located in a general area of upstate New York, Pennsylvania, you know, Ohio, and that area. And it's based upon the fruits that have been born there. Jesus said, you know them by their fruits. It's the birthplace of the women's movement, evangelicalism, the New Age movement, Mormonism, mm-hmm. called North Star Country. Harriet Tubman lived here, a lot of good things. And this place is one of the top places that I found, and I'm hoping to begin to open it up, you know, to people to come visit and teach them how to connect with Mother Earth as well as begin healing the world. So that you can find at spirithousesociety.org. That's spirithousesociety.org.
Well, thank you very much. We've come to the end of our hour. We've been hearing wonderful things from Maida Sinner, the author of The Way Home, Making Heaven on Earth. And I hope that you will let me know when your next book is coming out.
Oh, we definitely will. It's a great conversation. Thank you.
Well, and next week we have Dr. Norm Shealy, talking about the Shaley Tens and the Telomere Project. Dr. Shaley is the founder of the American Holistic Medical Association. And then Dr. Greg Teft, Your Personal Life, will be on the 26th. Noetic Science Meeting will be on Thursday, March 17th at 7:30 p.m. at the Dunwoody office. Charles Skillis, who's a hypnotherapist and actually a great spiritual leader here in Atlanta, will be discussing his book, Defeat the Enemy Within. So if you've been a little bit interested in our talk about thought forms and demons, please come to the Noetic Science Meeting. Dr. Skillis is an expert in energy entities and hypnotherapy, and I've always enjoyed hearing him speak. Anyway, thank you very much for joining us, and thanks so much, Maitis, for
the conversation. Well, thank you for having me on the show. It was a pleasure.
It was wonderful. This is Dr. Susan Kolb with Temple of Health Radio Show. Please join us next week.